Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There is a dream version of Lebanon that once, in fact, existed. The thriving, diverse commercial center of the Middle East, a Mediterranean tapestry of faiths with a good times capital in Beirut. For the last year, the dream had even more luster with the Cedar Revolution that pushed out Syria and held out the hope of new democracy. Now, after a month of war on Lebanese soil between Israel and Hezbollah, Lebanon is in ruins, and the dream is somewhere, maybe, in the rubble. Hezbollah looms large, Lebanon is digging out, and the phone lines, with luck, are clearing. Up next on Point, we talk with Lebanese citizens in Beirut about the war that's just ended and the future of Lebanon. We start today with the latest news. Thanasi Kambanis is Middle East Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. He joins us from Beirut. Thanasi, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
First, just give us a physical sense. You've just spent time in the south and come up to Beirut. Do you see the rebuilding from this destruction as a matter of months, of years, of decades? How does it look to you?
Well, the answer to that question, Tom, speaks exactly to the gap between the Shiites of Lebanon and the rest of the country. In the Shiite areas controlled by Hezbollah, bulldozers were out on Monday morning, the day of the ceasefire, in an incredible show of organizational resource by Hezbollah. In the parts of the country under the government's control, things are moving much more slowly. We have ministers giving press conferences talking about plans for long-term reconstruction. Hezbollah is already doing it for its people, and that's going to be the same divide that's going to play out in the political sphere as well.
We've just heard the Prime Minister, Fouad Senyora, calling for the end of mini-states, for one state. We've heard others saying we need one army, one country, one government. Does that look in the offing here, Thanasi?
I think we're going to see a lot more lip service to that than actual change on the ground. In southern Lebanon, the army is going to be there, but Hezbollah will be there as well. They've put their weapons away for the time being, and they're moving back their civilian role, rebuilding, reconstruction, delivering services. But they are, as ever, the force on the ground. They're the people in authority. They're the folks that people are turning to get help rebuilding their houses. And they're also the people who are giving, setting the political cues and telling people what to say in the aftermath of the war. So the government's authority, I suspect, is not going to be any greater in southern Lebanon with the presence of the soldiers there than it was before when Hezbollah was the only armed force on the ground.
Now, let me ask you about the conflict. There's a ceasefire. The UN resolution said ceasefire and disarmament. But already we've heard, as I'm reading here, from the Lebanese defense minister and others, and maybe from the French foreign minister, that France supposed to lead the international force when and if it arrives, that they are not going to disarm Hezbollah. So is this conflict over, or is this just a breather?
I think everyone's hoping it will just go away. They're hoping that Hezbollah will choose not to make this an issue. But everyone down the line that I've talked to has said we can't disarm Hezbollah by force, and in fact, we'll refuse to stay down there if anyone makes us try. That's what the Lebanese interior minister told me. That's what the defense ministry has said. And that's what I hear through diplomatic sources, the contributing nations to a multinational force are saying as well. We know from past experience that Hezbollah's guerrilla army is a formidable foe, and anyone who tries to take away their guns, their grenades, their missiles by force is going to face the same kind of fight that Israel did on the ground for the last month. And frankly, I don't think any of the international institutions organizing this are up for that or interested in such a war.
But of course, Israel went in part, we're told, out of fear of having that force sitting on its northern border, particularly if things get tough later with Iran. President Bush said this was a victory against Hezbollah precisely because, he said, it will now be disarmed. Are Israel, and for that matter the United States, going to sit by if Hezbollah is not disarmed? Do Lebanese expect that they will?
Well, first of all, no one in Lebanon expects that Hezbollah will actually be disarmed, just as a starting point. Now, what Israel accomplished by their fighting is they removed Hezbollah's fortified buffer zone in southern Lebanon. So there is one real change on the ground, which is you won't see Hezbollah bunkers overlooking the settlements of northern Israel. That is a significant strategic change. And with the presence of 30,000 Lebanese and international troops, it will be harder for Hezbollah to fire rockets, and it'll be certainly harder for them to rearm and reorganize to get back up to the strength they were on July 12th of this year. That being said, I think a lot of the declarations that have been made about the Hezbollah state within a state being abolished and a lot of the desire to see Hezbollah disarmed is wishful thinking rather than realistic policy.
And we'll hear from Lebanese themselves in just a moment, but let me ask you, Tanasi, your sense of how the Lebanese people look at Hezbollah now, supportive, critical, and if critical, do they feel free to say so? Sheikh Nasrallah has warned people about publicly criticizing Hezbollah.
Well, driving up last night from southern Lebanon to Beirut, I felt like I went from one completely different country to another. In the south, everyone is singing hosannas to Sheikh Hussein Hassan Nasrallah. He is viewed as a savior of Lebanon. People are enthusiastically embracing what he's done in this war, and they see no fault with Hezbollah. Once you get to Beirut and you see the Sunnis, the Druze, the Christians, there is a lot of anger, and I hear a lot of sense that people who are angry at Hezbollah have been silenced during the war. Now it's their time to speak up and hold Hezbollah to account for dragging the country into a war that only benefited, in these people's view, only benefited the Shia and the Hezbollah supporters. And that is what I expect we're going to be hearing a lot of over the coming months, and that kind of divisiveness will either turn into conflict or, I hope, to see it turn into some political dialogue and stability.
Tanasi Kambanis, Middle East Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe, joining us from Beirut. Tanasi, thank you very much for being with us. Be safe.
Thanks, Tom.
Now, from Beirut, Sophia Sadeh. Throughout this hour, we're going to be talking with Lebanese about the war and the future of Lebanon. Sophia Sadeh is professor of modern Middle Eastern studies at Lebanese University. She joins us now from her home in Beirut. Sophia Sadeh, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Can you describe for us first your experience of the war? You live adjacent to South Beirut. What was it like living through this last month?
Okay, I would like to explain that, but I have some comments on what your correspondent said, because, you know, people in the States think that Hezbollah is a foreign group of people. I just want to make sure that everybody knows those are the inhabitants of South Lebanon. I mean, those are the actual inhabitants. They are Lebanese, and they are living in the area, and they armed themselves only in 1982, following the Israeli invasion in Lebanon. So this is not an offensive force. It's a defense of the inhabitants of the area when the Israelis invaded the south and remained in it for 18 years. And this is a very important point to make.
Okay, we're here to listen to what you have to say. If that's what you want to go straight to, you're Christian, but are you supportive of Hezbollah and its role before, during the war, now?
I am an analyst, so I want to analyze the situation.
Yes.
You see, I am a researcher. I'm somebody who works, and I usually try to explain what is happening as a true statement being in the area and living in the area. So I know that Hezbollah are the inhabitants of the area. They are not foreign to South Lebanon.
Do you blame?
And the other point he made is the state or mini state, or what Prime Minister Senora said. I wrote a book on the structure of Lebanon, and the structure of Lebanon is the government is a coalition of sects. So each sect seems as if it is a state within a state. This is the makeup of Lebanon. It's not a democracy in the Western sense. It is a grand coalition of the sects, and the Shiites are one sect that has been deprived of power for a long period of time, because the coalition started as being Maronite and Sunni. And then you had the Shiite mobility.
We understand.
So this is the second point.
Do you welcome Hezbollah's wealth, its influence, its military arms, and do you blame it for the destruction that's just come to Lebanon or not?
Well, they didn't destroy. They reacted. They took the prisoners. They took two soldiers. You know that, as prisoners. This is not the first time they have done this. They did it before. And then the Israelis also kidnapped Lebanese from Lebanon. This has been going on. This is not something that Hezbollah did just now in 2006. For years, the kidnapping has been taking place from both sides in order to swap prisoners. And this was taking place. This time, Israel decided to answer in a different way by attacking the country. I don't know what, you know, went in their head, what was behind it, but this is what happened. Before, this didn't happen. We had swapping of prisoners a few years ago. And if you remember, the Germans were the ones who carried the negotiations between the two sides.
The prisoners
were released, except for three Lebanese who are still in jail in the Israeli prisons.
Who do you think won this war, Safiya Sadi? Who do you think won the war of the last month, if anyone?
I don't think anybody won the war. I don't think anybody won the war. Although Hezbollah, I mean people from Hezbollah, they won in the sense that they were able to hold the advance of the Israelis. That is, Israel was not able to reach the Litani River as they had stated. But in the end, I mean, I don't know whether you would consider that winning or not. But also Israel did not win, because what would the destruction, I mean, how did Israel win? By destroying Lebanon.
We're joined right now from his office in West Beirut by Luqman Salim. He's founder of a group called Haya Bina. It's a pro-democracy, anti-sectarian group. Its offices were heavily damaged in the bombardment, in the Israeli bombing of the war. One employee was injured. He's a filmmaker, former book publisher. He joins us now from Beirut. Luqman Salim, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
What's your view on the way ahead after this war? Are you optimistic or not?
I think that before talking about optimism or pessimism, we have to fix some more terms of the discussion. First, we didn't reach yet a ceasefire. We are still in a period of cessation of hostilities. This is my first remark.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, I would like to comment what Mrs. Saadi said about the Hezbollah. I mean, the problem with the Hezbollah is that it's a very complex organization, and it's very difficult to imagine that a kind of organization which was an offshoot of the Iranian policy of exporting the revolution turned within 2 decades into a party representing a community which is the Shia one. So it's just to avoid some simplification. Of course, the Hezbollah succeeded to a large extent in identifying itself to the Shia community, but it does not represent exhaustively the Shia community in Lebanon.
On balance, do you see Hezbollah as having been good or bad for Lebanon?
Personally, I cannot agree with the basis, with the theological basis on which the Hezbollah was founded. So I think that in an open society like the Lebanese one, or in a society which is trying to be an open one, a clear reference involving religion in politics is a bad thing. Would it come from the Hezbollah or from any other party?
Sheikh Nasrallah has recently warned people against criticizing Hezbollah. Do you feel free to speak critically of this group?
I think that I will lose everything if I lose this courage of saying aloud what I think. So it's a question also of personal credibility. Sheikh Nasrallah said Nasrallah could say whatever he wants, but he will never prevent Lebanese, would they be Shia or non-Shia, of expressing themselves. Would it be in a critical way towards Hezbollah, or in a positive way, especially that Hezbollah is today commanding to a large extent the future of this country? And as citizen of this country, I think that I have the right to express myself.
And what about, we've seen on television and heard on the radio Lebanese celebrating a Hezbollah victory and welcoming that. How do you interpret the Lebanese population's view of Hezbollah? And I know it's not monolithic, but how do you interpret that, the stripes?
I mean, for me, it's nothing strange. It's 2 decades of brainwashing. So it's not really surprising to see these people who were brainwashed during 20 years celebrating today what they consider being a divine victory. I am not saying that the Hezbollah didn't win this round of the war, but I think that the price of this victory is very heavy. Would it be in terms of destruction, of physical destruction, or more important, regarding the Lebanese model of cohabitation, because a lot of Lebanese within the Shia community as well as non-Shia consider that the Hezbollah behaved in a non-consensual way when he decided to wage this war, or at least to undertake the operation which led to this war.
Mm. Lukman Slim, Sophia Sadeh, both in Beirut, please stand by. I want to welcome yet another voice, also from Beirut, Ibrahim Moussaoui. He's director of foreign programming for Al-Manar Television, big satellite news channel partly owned by Hezbollah. Station was a target in the recent Israeli incursion. Al-Manar's been tagged as a terrorist operation by the U.S. and Israeli governments. Ibrahim Moussaoui, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What do you make of what's just happened in the last month of Lebanon's history? Who brought this destruction on the country?
I mean, I believe it's since my friend, Reverend, and colleague, Lukman Salim, were talking about, not to oversimplify the things, I would go into the root of the problem. I mean, this is not something that happened just right now. I mean, you're talking about occupation, Israeli occupation to Lebanon since long time ago, and Israeli continuity of aggression, violations of the sovereignty in sea, in water, in sea, in ground, and in space. So, I mean, what brought this to Lebanon since the Israeli withdrawal that were forced on the Israelis in the year 2000 by the Hezbollah fighters, by the resistance in Lebanon with different factions, there were still part of Lebanon occupied by the Israelis. This is Shema farms, and there were still Lebanese hostages. They were about to be retrieved by Lebanon, but at the last minute they were excluded during the last swap deal. Nobody knew why they did it. I mean, there had been a swap between Hezbollah and the Israelis in direct negotiations, and everybody was given just the three. And then they were talking, Hezbollah is taking them as a bargaining chip, as an alibi to continue. And Hezbollah said, well, if you consider that, why don't you snatch this alibi from my hands and give back Shabaab farms and give back the hostages that you have taken, and
Mr. Moussaoui, let me ask you, the UN resolution around the ceasefire calls for Hezbollah to be disarmed. Do you believe Hezbollah will be disarmed?
I mean, let me tell you one simple thing. The United Nations and the UN, the Security Council, is not something that is highly respected here in Lebanon. I mean, how come? I mean, the United Nations itself couldn't condemn Israel for the killing of four UN observers in South Lebanon. They couldn't stop them from massacring the people under the flag of the United Nations in Kana massacre in 1996. And now in Narwahin, at the onset and the start of this massacre, of this onslaught by the Israelis. So, I mean, when you talk about UN and disarming Hezbollah, I believe this is a pretty internal domestic issue that should be discussed and was already being discussed by the different Lebanese political groups in the table of the national dialogue.
But you're quoted as saying that there is no army that can disarm Hezbollah. So will it disarm or not?
Hezbollah will only disarm via dialogue and discussion and negotiations. And let me tell you one simple thing. I don't know where did you bring this, that Sayyid Nasrallah threatened or warned people from criticizing Hezbollah. And I wonder how did my friend and colleague, Lukman Slim, he answered this question without telling you that Hezbollah, I want you to produce this text that Sayyid Nasrallah criticized or warned anyone to criticize Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not a God sent, it's not a sacred or whatever, it's not a divine. They are people who work in politics and they could criticize and say whatever you want about them. I could refer you to one of the articles that was recently written in the articles and magazines that criticized harshly Hezbollah, and people have the right to do it. The only thing that Nasrallah was saying, he was calling on the different political groups not to disunite at this juncture, at this very sensitive period of time. I mean, most of the things that are being said about Hezbollah, I believe they are trying to give a distorted image and they are misleading in many ways and dimensions.
Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lukman Slim, Sophia Sadeh, we have a lot of listeners in the United States who want to join the conversation with you. Please stand by for a moment. Paul is calling from Falmouth, Massachusetts. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Thank you. because Lebanon is such a diverse federation of different views and always needs strong political leadership, and the strong political leadership that was experienced by prior Prime Minister Harari, who was assassinated, is there some individuals in the future of Lebanon who have the stature of Harari or who can exert that same kind of vision and also help with the development of the country to the new Paris of the Mideast as the Harari family had done?
Let us pick it up. Sophia Sadeh in Beirut. What about it? Who will lead Lebanon now?
I agree with him that Hariri played a very big role that went beyond his sect, because in Lebanon usually you have heads of sects that are ruling the country. So you usually, as a sect, cannot rule over another sect. But Hariri was able to do this up to a point because of his stature, wealth, and international connections. Now we don't have this, and we will have... This is one solution, because you asked about disarming Hezbollah. I think unless there is a reform in the political system whereby the Shiites would feel at ease within the government, you are not going to have a solution on the internal level in Lebanon.
I want to bring one more voice in here, if I may. Joining us from Beirut is Wael Abu Faour. He's Druze, member of parliament in the Lebanese government. Wael Abu Faour, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
How do you look at this issue of Hezbollah's power, its strength, its influence coming out of this war? Is it good? Is it bad? Can Lebanon prosper with it?
Sorry, I didn't get your question.
What do you make of Hezbollah's role in Lebanon now?
First, I don't represent the Druze sect in Lebanon. I represent the Progressive Socialist Party. Second, about Hezbollah. Hezbollah is part of the Lebanese society. He is a political party. He has his arms. The main conflict with Hezbollah is not that we accuse Hezbollah to be a terrorist party. No one can say that. Hezbollah is a part of this society, but Hezbollah is asked from all the Lebanese to stick to a Lebanese agenda, not an Iranian agenda or a Syrian agenda. And we know that Hezbollah has played a very great role in our history. He has achieved a great achievement in 2000 when he liberated the south of Lebanon from the Israeli occupation. Now Hezbollah's role depends on what will the leadership of Hezbollah decide, if they are going to stick to a Lebanese, a national agenda, or they will be related to other agendas in the region, especially the Iranian agenda.
You've said in the past, very recently, just a couple of days ago, that Hezbollah has more resources, more manpower, more funding from Iran and Syria than the Lebanese government itself, that Hezbollah is stronger than the Lebanese state, and you've said that its goals do not coincide with the interests of Lebanon. What do you mean by that?
Where did I say that?
You're quoted in the Boston Globe by Tanasi Kambanis, who we spoke with at the top of this hour. Forgive me if you don't recognize the quote, but do you think that Hezbollah's goals are the same as the interests of Lebanon writ large?
This is what we are asking Hezbollah to do. Hezbollah, as I told you, is a political party, is part of the Lebanese society, and he's asked to be part of the Lebanese political scene and to be related to a Lebanese agenda, especially after what happened in the last month. A lot of the Lebanese doubt that Hezbollah wasn't totally behaving as a Lebanese party. He has some other interests, especially related to the Iranian interest and to the Syrian interest. This is why Hezbollah is now asked to be part of this agenda, Lebanese agenda. He has a great power. He has a great popularity. He has a lot of funds. He has a lot of associations. And he is part of the Lebanese political scene. This is why, to the benefit of Lebanon, Hezbollah is asked, and Mr. Wali Jumblat today asked Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah to be part of this Lebanese agenda, not any other agenda.
Ibrahim Moussaoui at Al-Manar, close to Hezbollah. Do you see the interest of Hezbollah and the interest of Lebanon as one in the same? Hezbollah's backing from Iran is well known, and a lot of money has flowed into Lebanon through that. But whose interest does Hezbollah represent, Iran's or Lebanon's or just the Shiites? How do you define it?
Well, for those who are trying to cast the doubts and the skepticism about Hezbollah's role, I believe they have to produce one single incident where Hezbollah acted in a way for the Iranian interest or for the Syrian interest. Where did Hezbollah do anything that went into contradiction with the Lebanese domestic interest?
Well, Lebanon is in tatters right now, and many would say it's because of the provocation to the Israelis of the rocketing and kidnapping.
Let me make it very clear to you. Hezbollah, in the ministerial statement that this government has gained the confidence of the parliament in it, it was provided and it stipulated that Hezbollah has the right to carry operations against the Israelis to liberate Shabaha-occupied farms and to retrieve the Lebanese hostages in the Israeli prisons. Everybody knew that Hezbollah was going to carry this operation. Said Nasrallah told it to all of those, many figures in the table of the national dialogue.
Was it worth it? Was it worth it when you look at the destruction of Lebanon? Was it worth it, the move of July 12th.
I want to remind you, Israel has always been the target of the Israeli aggression. In 1968, and you have to take many instances and junctures of history, before the existence of Hezbollah, the Israelis have come to Lebanon and destroyed and made incursions and killed and destroyed and did a lot of massacres in Lebanon before the existence of Hezbollah. We know about the Israeli ambitions and threats to Lebanon, to its soil, to its water, to everything. But I want to tell you one thing. I mean, when people talk about Hezbollah being part of the Lebanese national agenda and Lebanese interest, I believe they have to be as well part of this agenda. They shouldn't be part of the American agenda and the French agenda or the Western agenda. I mean, you're talking now about a conflict about that you should resolve via dialogue and via negotiations. It's not right at all to go and cast doubts and just to accuse others. I mean, 88% of the Lebanese in a new pollster has been conducted in Beirut are after the resistance. Everybody knew that they are going to carry this operation. A child as much as a politician in Lebanon knew, and they did carry many operations before like this one, I mean.
Wael Abu Farah, we have you only for another minute. How do you look at the future today? Do you think democracy can be reinvigorated in Lebanon? Is it set back by the war? How do you look at the future?
Well, I think that the Lebanese people are able, and they tried. They had an experience to have a complementary position between the democracy and between resistance. And yes, I agree with what was said, that no one in Lebanon should be part of any foreign agenda, French, American, Iranian, or Syrian, or anything like that.
Wael Abu Farah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Ahmad is calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Ahmad, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to say that one thing is, first of all, if you look at the Hezbollah, why do they take all the pictures of the Iranian leaders? Why are the pictures of the Iranian leaders the only pictures they carry if they are not working for Iran? Secondly, the people in Lebanon are scared of saying something bad about Hezbollah, obviously, because they want to protect their family and their own lives. So somebody from the outside would find it easier to speak honestly. Thirdly, because these countries don't want to fight each other, they do their fighting and they take advantage of the Lebanese not getting along with each other. They do their fighting in Lebanon. And everybody knows these things. And everybody looks at it and they see those pictures being carried. They know that they work for Iran. Thank you very much.
Ahmad, thank you for calling. Lokman Slim in Beirut. What do you think of the Sheikh Nasrallah said in his speech on Monday of critics? He was very harsh against people who dared to criticize Hezbollah. And Ibrahim Massawi gives his explanation for this. But Nasrallah said, "We heard them speak from their air-conditioned offices while people were watching their houses being demolished. This is really unethical and a big mistake." Our caller in Washington says people don't feel free to criticize Hezbollah. You heard Wael Abu Farah there, kind of backtracking from the quotes I was reading to him. Do you feel Hezbollah's strength growing?
In fact, the question is not what Sayyid Nasrallah said in his last speech. It's the behavior of Hezbollah over the last, let's say, 18 months since the assassination of Mr. Rafiq Hariri. And just to mention one example, I mean, last December, the Hezbollah put on hold his participation to the Lebanese cabinet and in a way prevented any other or threatened any other Shia who would join the cabinet. So we are not talking about one speech. I mean, the most important thing regarding the Hezbollah today is that the Hezbollah, since the Israeli withdrawal from South Lebanon in 2000, is trying to advocate a kind of weird equation which consists on the cohabitation of the resistance between courts and a state. And this equation, I think, proved its failure at the occasion of this last war. So the Hezbollah is asked today by a lot of Lebanese Shia and non-Shia to precise what lays exactly under the term resistance. And here I join Mr. Abu Faour. I mean, what's the Lebanese agenda? What's the Lebanese resistance agenda in case there is one? I mean, and to widen a little bit the discussion, we have to ask why Syria could pretend being a country resisting without leading any resistance, without endangering itself. So the questions that Hezbollah needs to ask after its victory between courts represent the concerns of a lot of Lebanese who first did not feel that this war was necessary, second have a lot of doubt about the outcomes of this war in spite of all the propaganda conveying its provisional end or its end. I don't know.
It may not be over. Safia Sadeh in Beirut, we have seen a lot of cheering for Hezbollah here. At the same time, our Druze guest, Wael Abu Faour, warns against the possibility of civil war. Lebanon has been plagued by that in the past. Do you see the strengthened Hezbollah here leading the way toward cohabitation and championing Lebanese interests, or is the civil war a risk?
Well, I have always thought that with or without Hezbollah, the risk of civil war exists in Lebanon due to the fact of the fragile structure, political structure we have that is based on sectarian representation. So whenever you have a sect that is growing demographically, like the Shiites, and is not being integrated in proportion to its size within the government, you are going to have a problem. So, yes, there is going to be a problem. This is why I am asking for a reform. You need to integrate the Shiites within the political structure in accordance with their proportion.
And what about
proportion.
What about the future of this larger conflict that Lebanon seems to be part of between Iran and Israel, Iran and the United States? What future do you hold? Lukman Slim reminds us that this may not be over. Are you fearful that Lebanon will be pulled further into this conflict?
I agree. I mean, this is another aspect. We have been talking about the internal situation within Lebanon and the role of Hezbollah within the political structure of Lebanon. But you also have the other part, which is the division of the Arab world into two camps, a camp that has already signed peace treaties with Israel and another camp that did not. And unfortunately, Lebanon is stuck in the middle in this fight.
Let me turn to a call. Kathleen's calling from Boston. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering, in looking ahead at Lebanon's future and looking at the rebuilding process, whether or not the Lebanese that you have today with you are considering, or if people they know are considering, pursuing either legal channels to demand some sort of financial and legal accountability from Israel for the destruction of Lebanon's civilian infrastructure and, for that matter, violations of international humanitarian law.
From Israel alone?
From Israel, well, I feel like this has been a lot of focus so far on Hezbollah and the provocation by Hezbollah. But in fact, I think that the destruction itself was really rained down by Israel, and I think that that's fairly clear.
Safia Sadeh, I hear you responding. What do you think?
Yes, the statistics, I mean, talk. In Lebanon, we have over 1,000 dead people. The third of them are children, and around 4,000 wounded. In Israel, we have 100 soldiers, not civilians. In Lebanon, you had many civilians there.
Also civilian, but yes, okay.
15,000 homes. 15,000 homes that have been completely destroyed between South Beirut and the south of Lebanon.
Should Israel pay? Should the United States? Or is that what you're saying?
Well, the UN refused. They wanted to put it in the UN to have, you know, compensation for all of this destruction. But the UN, we didn't get the vote on that. We didn't get a unanimous vote on that.
Lukman Salim,
they should.
Lukman Salim, let me turn to you. You've spoken with Americans. I think you spoke at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington recently, so you know the conservative crowd there. Do you think that Israel and or the United States should pay a kind of compensation for this destruction, or is that unreasonable?
I think that the international community in its all is responsible to help the Lebanese. And I mean, the question of helping to the reconstruction raises another question regarding the Hezbollah, as the Hezbollah is pledging to participate largely to this effort. So perhaps it is the good moment for the Hezbollah to tell the Lebanese more about his financial resources. Would it be his resources militarily, one, or the one allowing him to undertake such huge reconstruction project?
Suma's calling from Silver Springs, Maryland. Hi, Suma, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm.
Now, in my opinion, there are two situations here. One, we failed to mention the fact that Hezbollah continues to exist because of the fact that situations prevailing within Lebanon as well as between Lebanon and Israel gives reason for Hezbollah to continue to exist. And moreover, that vacuum that is being created by the fact that Israel has Lebanese hostages and continue to occupy the Shibar farm gives an opening for the likes of Iran to extend their support for the likes of Hezbollah.
So look to some solution with Israel. Our time is very short here, Suma. Let me pick that up. Lukman Salim, I'll ask each of my guests about it, but what about it? On the Israel front, what could an agreement be that would settle this? Is there some path to resolution with Israel that could put Lebanon on a better path? And what would it be?
I think it's too early to answer these questions. We are in the middle of this Iranian-American confrontation, and I think that it's too early to think about a Lebanese-Israeli solution.
Ibrahim Moussaoui, could Lebanon be pulled out of this equation somehow? Can it make a separate peace here, or is it hostage to a bigger confrontation between, let's say, the U.S. and Iran?
I believe we have to take care of what's really at hand. I mean, the big problem that we have to talk about, it has to do with what's called the Middle East problem, Middle East crisis, and this has nothing to do with Iran. I know, we cannot ignore what...
Nothing to do with Iran, but Iran is right in the middle of Lebanon.
Let me just
please
continue. I'm
mm-hmm.
talking about the Palestinian cause. You have
I see.
More than 400,000 mm-hmm. Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, and mm-hmm. the United Nations has been calling for returning them back. You're talking about Israel. You're talking about 250 nuclear warheads. You're talking about a superpower in the region.
If the Palestinian issue could be settled by some miracle, would that solve the problem for Hezbollah in Lebanon, or do you want Israel to go away?
I mean, it depends. I mean, what's Hezbollah's problem in Lebanon? I don't agree that there is a problem with Hezbollah.
Well, there's a confrontation, let's say.
I do not understand Hezbollah. Yeah, and the confrontation, absolutely. When there is a comprehensive peace, a long, genuine peace, which would give people and would end the injustices, absolutely, this will end. All the things will end, of course. I mean, after all, Hezbollah came as a reaction to the Israeli invasion and to the Israeli continuous aggressions and to the recklessness, if you want, and the indifference of the international community. I mean, had they did anything about it, nothing would have taken place of the sort that we have seen.
Ibrahim Moussaoui, thank you. Safiya Sadeh, the last word goes to you today. Do you see a path out of this conflict for Lebanon?
Yes, I think if we go back to the Madrid conference and if the U.S. Takes an active role as it used to be in solving the problem and having land in exchange for peace, Hezbollah will not be armed at all and doesn't need to be armed, no more confrontations in the Middle East. This is all what the Arabs are asking is their land back. Israel will continue existing, but they need the Golan Heights, the Shebaa farms in Lebanon, and the Palestinians should have their state, and that would be over. The whole problem would be over.
Well, we'll wish for the successful rebuilding of Lebanon and a path to peace somewhere in here. I'm grateful to each of you for your time in being with us today. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Director of Foreign Programming at Al-Manar Television, closely associated with Hezbollah. Mr. Moussaoui, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Luqman Slim, founder of Haya Bina, a non-sectarian political activist in Beirut, filmmaker, former publisher. Mr. Slim, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Sophia Sadeh, professor of modern Middle Eastern studies at Lebanese University. Ms. Sadeh, good luck to you, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Same to you.
I want to turn now to New York and Rahida Derham. She's New York-based senior diplomatic correspondent and columnist for Al Hayat, a pan-Arab Arabic language newspaper. Rahida Derham, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
So there we've just heard four voices from Lebanon, and of course there are many more, and we could spend a lot more time. What do you make of the images and picture we're seeing out of Lebanon over these last few days? Hezbollah, at least riding high in the saddle in the reconstruction already, claiming a kind of victory. You hear the tension among these Lebanese citizens we've spoken with today. Where is this country headed?
It's too early to claim victory by anyone. I think this war is not concluded yet. We have a cessation of hostilities. We may have a ceasefire, a sustainable ceasefire, but only and if only all parties understand what it takes. That includes the United States revisiting its policies, that Israel has to learn that it cannot go on with being taking the upper highway here, though it's been really shrunk in size and in influence, and for Hezbollah to decide, really, what does it want for Lebanon? Does it want the elimination of the government and the state of Lebanon so that Hezbollah can reign, or is it really part of the fabric of the society and is going to become truly Lebanese and not a proxy for Iran or Syria?
You're Lebanese in your heart. What do you feel here? Can Lebanon escape this matrix of bigger interests that surround it now? Can it make it somehow its own peace?
It would take courageous positions by the United States and Israel above all. It will require that they take such decisions. And
like
it's
what?
Time. The United States needs to understand that at the heart of all this is occupation, and it has to pressure Israel to deliver on the issue of the Palestinians and something as small as that Shebaa Farms episode. The Israelis think that if they withdraw from Shebaa Farms, they will be rewarding Hezbollah. I think this is nonsense. This is not a reward for Hezbollah. It is, in fact, their continued occupation of the Shebaa Farms that will give the pretext for Hezbollah to go on claiming that it has the authority to resist, and it will keep it, for the Syrians a foothold into playing havoc in Lebanese politics. And that's the sort of thing I'm talking about, the brave decisions that need to be taken. Also, I believe that the Lebanese army is for the moment, it's great that the army is going to the south. I think the government is under a lot of pressure. And I think part of what the purpose of several players in the region is the downfall of the government of Fuad Sanura. He is the safety valve for this country, but I think that he needs a lot of support, financial and political and military, and he needs to be empowered also by certain policies in order to really win against Hezbollah.
At the moment, no one other than the text of the resolution is saying that Hezbollah will in fact be disarmed.
Yes, I understand that for the moment, but my fear is that such a miscalculation would lead to an incredible disaster for Lebanon, the country. What I'm saying is that there is no way I can imagine that a solution, a long-term solution or a ceasefire is going to be in place on the basis of Hezbollah keeping its weapons. To me, it is not on the table.
But they're not giving them up, so does that mean we go back to war?
My fear, it's exactly that. My fear is that Israel has a war in mind, but Israel is not going to have a war against Hezbollah in mind, despite all the destruction it brought upon the country. Israel has in mind a full war on Lebanon, in which case I don't know how Hezbollah could claim a victory at that point, having already caused such destruction for the country. I think an all-out war on Lebanon is going to be much more costly, and it would be only for the benefit of Iran and Syria and Israel, and none of it for the benefit of Lebanon and the Lebanese.
A full house of Lebanese voices today. Rahida Dirham, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Rahida Dirham with Al Hayat. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.